Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Joining us on the line now from Sydney is Richard Hubbard, experienced journalist, former Reuters journalist, to tell us more about what's happening there. Richard, hello and welcome to the show.
Hello there.
What is the latest happening in Victoria State now with their lockdown from your vantage point?
Well, it looks like Victoria is going to record about another 357 new COVID-19 cases today and a further 6 deaths. So that situation there, not getting that much better, still quite high. And, yeah, mainly people in their 80s and 90s and care homes are being badly hit in this latest outbreak.
And, Richard, I mean, I used to live in Victoria. I lived in Geelong, and I know the mood there at the moment is not great. There's a fear that this thing may not be contained to those suburbs around Melbourne. What are you getting in terms of the general mood in Australia? Because now you're seeing lots of think pieces. Where did it all go wrong for Australia? Of course, initially they were seen as the bastion of doing the right thing. It was the Aussies and the Kiwis were the benchmarks, the gold standard for the world. And now almost daily I'm seeing different commentaries. Where did it go wrong? What did they not do right? And so on and so on. I mean, from your point of view, Richard, where did they go wrong?
Well, obviously, in the Victorian case, it seems to be with managing the quarantine of the overseas travellers in the hotels. Mm. There's been a lot of stories breaking about how that was badly run, effectively, with very poor training for the security guards. There is an inquiry going on, so, I mean, we're getting the details day by day of some of the things that went on there. And it doesn't sound like it was as professional as you would have expected. That said, you know, the rest of Australia is doing quite well. So, I mean, I think people are just very concerned about Victoria. There's some leakage, if you like, of the virus into New South Wales. There's been some growing outbreaks there, and that certainly spread the fears of a second wave to Sydney. And then the rest of Australia, borders are being tightened. There's quite a lot of monitoring of the situation, but so far not too much in the way of outbreaks.
We're speaking with Richard Hubbard, a freelance journalist based in Sydney, Australia, the former Singapore bureau chief for Reuters. You've lived around the region for many years. And when you see the responses, for example, you know, in Singapore, Malaysia, other places, and you compare them with the Australian experience, are there things that you think maybe Australians maybe took for granted in this? Of course, the country is much larger and it's a more diverse landscape. But are you seeing any comparisons between what's happened in Australia versus perhaps what's happened across Southeast Asia?
Well, certainly when I was in Singapore for the SARS outbreak in 2003, you got, as you often know with Singapore, you get a very strong response from the government, and they did the lockdown. They closed some of the schools. I think they closed the market. They even had a jail sentence for anyone breaking quarantine orders. That certainly would have been a slower response in Australia, although they did stop the transport or the arrivals from China fairly quickly. But when I arrived here in March and the outbreak was sort of underway, came through the airport, there were no checks, there was no warning.
Is that right?
We came in.
Did that surprise you? I mean, that there was really no sort of top-down, or it seemed no top-down approach on this?
Well, coming from the UK, there wasn't that much going on there either at that stage. We're talking sort of the first half of March here. So it kind of surprised us a little bit, but not overly, I guess. We'd come through Singapore on our way out, and there were temperature checks going on there, and the airport was quite quiet. So we were aware of it, obviously. But, yeah, I think, like everywhere, I guess, governments reacted a little bit more slowly than those that had experienced something like SARS firsthand before.
Yeah, and this takes on a very personal point of view from you in that you had COVID-19. You came down with it. Now, tell us about your experience, your story with that.
Yes, I know. It's a very first-hand account. I think somewhere in London before I came back to Australia, I contracted the disease because a few days after landing, I did not feel well. And in fact, for a couple of days, I was in bed feeling very sick. So then decided the best thing to do was to go and get tested. The public testing areas had been set up by that stage. It was a longish queue to go and get a test. Got the test. That did turn out to be positive. And after that, given that I was, as you do with this bug, you have difficulty breathing when it gets into your lungs. And so I felt the safest thing for me to do was to go to the hospital, and that's exactly what I did. And as it happens, given that this was in March, I was one of the first people to go to hospital with COVID-19. At least the hospital I went to in central Sydney, I was their first patient.
And Richard, you know, it's interesting what you're saying, because we so often hear with COVID that most people are asymptomatic, most people don't even know they have it, most people survive. But I sometimes think it overlooks the most obvious point of all, which is the people who do get it, in many cases, it's a very nasty and painful experience. And you seem to be alluding to it there, that some of your symptoms were not particularly pleasant either. What were your symptoms?
Yes, well, no, I would definitely say anyone who says this is like flu hasn't had it yet. It's much more serious. It does come on a little bit like that. And when I first fell ill, I thought that might be what it is. But when it gets into your lungs, then you really know. And that's what happened with me. It infected my lungs. It spread into my lungs. And breathing becomes very difficult. Fortunately, once that started, I called the ambulance, went to the hospital, and they gave me a oxygen feed through my nose. And that, for me, was all I needed. Once my body started getting oxygen, I was relaxed. The medical service provided me with some drugs just to treat any kind of secondary infections. You know, my body recovered, thankfully. That's all I can say, really. I mean, there isn't any treatment for this. You really rely on your body, but it can be a tough thing to go through, that's for sure.
And that's fabulous that you've made the recovery, Richard. I mean, I have read somewhere that there are lingering effects in terms of breathing and lung capacity. Has that been the case with you, or is it a complete recovery?
I'm thinking complete at this stage. I'm not noticing anything. I would say the first few weeks after I came out of hospital, my lungs definitely weren't 100%, and I was certainly not doing any vigorous exercise. But that's the advice you get, to do some exercise, to do some breathing exercises in particular. I've been doing those, and recently taken up some cycling in a nearby park and getting some good solid exercise in, and I'm feeling a lot better now.
Richard, as you look around, and in Sydney particularly, and now, of course, Greater Australia, it seems like Western Australia is doing pretty well. The Sydney area is not doing too badly itself in terms of COVID.
Queensland seems good.
Queensland is all right. You know, we are, of course, heading into winter in Australia right now, but summer is not far off, and the tourist season that is so urgently important for businesses. What are people expecting to see in coming months? What are they preparing for as it relates to, as we get into September, October, November? Is there any plan yet by people, or is it too early to tell?
It's a little bit fluid, I would say, at this stage. We have friends, you know, setting off on holidays shortly, who want to head up to Queensland, and they're very worried about whether the border will still be open because of the spread in New South Wales. Certainly some of the other borders are not open, so right. If you're from New South Wales and Victoria, it's virtually very difficult to go to the rest of Australia. But I think on the whole, and this has been borne out, that people are taking to domestic tourism with something of greater enthusiasm, and I think there's a lot of encouragement for people to go and if you like, spend some money in the regional areas of New South Wales, which have suffered, first of all, from the bushfire at the start of the year, and then the COVID outbreak, and tourism is certainly an industry that these areas thrive on. So with the lack of international travellers, which probably won't be back again until well into 2021 at this rate, there is some hopes that people will travel. There's some encouragement that people travel. But then there are all these restrictions preventing you going interstate. So it's kind of, it's limited travel, if you like. That said, you know, as you know, some of the Australian states are quite large, so you can travel somewhere like New South Wales for a long time without seeing it all. So there's plenty to do. And I think people will once the weather recovers, depending, again, how serious this kind of second wave, as people are referring it to, eventually turns out to be.
We're talking with Richard Hubbard, a freelance journalist currently based in Sydney. And Richard, on that point, the economy. I think I just saw yesterday the Prime Minister saying that they could be looking at the toughest economic situation since the Second World War. And it's seemingly forgotten already that, of course, the huge bushfire disaster of the previous summer had a massive impact on the tourism sector across Australia, which, of course, the country is still recovering from. And now if you add to the fact that the likes of Singapore, a huge tourism market for Australia, will not be travelling to Australia this year because of our own travel restrictions, similar situations across Southeast Asia, in Indonesia, Malaysia and so on. What are the economic projections for Australia? I mean, it must be a little bit grim at the moment.
It's very grim. I think the Treasurer did come out with a budget statement this week. The forecasts are for quite sizable contractions, perhaps not this year, but next year. It looks far worse. And I mean, the big factor is employment and unemployment. I mean, they've got a thing here called JobKeeper, in which the government's funding money to businesses for them to keep their staff paid and on their books. But that's being tapered back. And once that starts to taper back, those people who are on JobKeeper, if their business, the work that they work for is not recovered, they then move into unemployment full time. And the numbers that they're projecting there are literally in the millions, and that could take Australia's unemployment, I think, to somewhere around 10%, which is certainly unheard of. And you've got to remember, Australia is a place that hasn't had a recession for nearly 30 years, and this is the first one, and it's definitely on target to be the worst downturn, at least, since the Great Depression of the 1930s. That said, you know, it's potentially better here than some other places. Australia's got a smallish economy. It thrives on things like mining exports, and iron ore, coal, and those sorts of products are still going out of the mines and still going off overseas. So there's some resilience in the economy, but the tourist sector and the education sector, which is both of which are probably in the top five of the big sectors in Australia, have been really badly hit.
I was just going to say there, Richard, to jump in, that education was going to be my next question, because you have the huge international student market to contend with as well, don't you?
Yes, and these are full fee-paying students, so the universities do rely on them pretty heavily to fund their operations. And clearly, these are not coming back in anywhere near the numbers, and there's not even sure yet when they will come back, although there is pressure building here to get them back by September, presumably on some sort of quarantining arrangements so that they can be re-enrolled and can start back at colleges and universities. But that is a big market, and from what we're seeing, universities are going to be cutting back quite substantially. They've already unveiled some fairly sizable staffing cutbacks. And the other interesting thing is that, you know, the universities themselves have a lot of part-time employees, and so it's not a difficult thing and for them to just say to people, well, sorry, you don't have a job anymore, and that's it. And a lot of academics and other people connected to universities are really quite nervous at this point.
Definitely a complex situation and many layers to it. Thanks to Richard Hubbard, a Sydney-based journalist and former Singapore bureau chief for Reuters. Really appreciate your time and your comments today, Richard.
All right. Thank you for having me.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.